Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Today We Learn. This is a little bit different of an episode. We're going to do a throwback episode. Last week was E3 and we were busy, Dan and I, so we decided to take the week off and do a throwback episode. We wanted to do an older episode, so I thought, you know what, let's do an episode almost half of how many we've done so far. So this is going to be number 66 with Zachary Levi, in case you've missed it. Zach is a really talented actor. You've seen him recently on Heroes Reborn, the Heroes revival on NBC there. You may remember him from Chuck or Thor, number two. But he's currently starring in a Tony-nominated She Loves Me Broadway musical. He also, believe it or not, was nominated for his role, for a Tony Award as well. The Tony Awards were recent, so I'm like, you know what, let's have Zach's throwback episode and tell everybody to go see the play She Loves Me over there in New York. It's a really great play. It's based on a book. It's pretty much the origin of You've Got Mail with Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. It's one of those things. It's a super old musical from 1963, and it's really great. Zach's really great in it. Zach's great at singing and dancing. He can just do everything. He's a really funny dude, really great dude. So without further ado, today we learned number 140, Throwback with Zachary Levi.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Today We Learned. My name is Razzle. Dan is on his way. He had a shoot that ran late, so he's going to be joining us a little bit late. But boy, do we have a fun episode today. We have a lot of facts I have compiled here, a lot of fun facts. And we have a very, very special guest, a very good friend of mine. He's an actor, he's a director. You know, a lot of you may know him for his role on Chuck. More recently, Fandral in Thor, The Dark World. Those of you with children will recognize his voice as Flynn Rider from the wonderful movie Tangled. He's a owner of a multimedia and clothing company called The Nerd Machine. And also, he's a huge advocate for charities and great causes. Most commonly, there's one he's really familiar with, Operation Smile. So looking at that, that's a really good charity there. As you know, because you clicked download on this episode, our guest is Zachary Levi. Zachary Levi, say hello.
Hi. What's up, Raz?
How you doing, sir? Long time no see.
I know, right? We just, I'm sure a lot of your listeners out there know that we do a podcast together called yes. Picking Favorites as well. So yes. I'm quite familiar with your naked body and a microphone. People yes. don't realize that Razzle always does his podcast naked.
Yes.
We don't talk about it a lot, and I figured this is the opportunity to tell you he is completely butt naked.
Way to let the cat out of the bag. You're like the hackers on Sony. Please don't publish this. The information was stolen illegally. Recording studios are always, you know, I like to get comfortable. And
it does affect the voice. People don't realize. Clothing can weigh down the voice.
Especially when all you wear is corduroy, and that's all I wear. And if I'm going to record with...
You just sound like Zydeco music. You sound like washboard in Zydeco music. Thanks for the rundown of my IMDb there as well. That was quite good, actually. Yeah. You hit all the bullet points, including the nonprofit, which I appreciate.
Absolutely.
I feel like I do feel a little ashamed that I don't have a more modern credit than Thor the Dark World, which came out a few years ago. I did a Broadway
yes.
show, which was the most recent thing, and then I was unemployed. I've been unemployed for some time.
It's you got to get on that Tangled sequel.
Tangleder.
Untangled, the documentary of the making. It's like if they were actors acting, and like Flynn's just like he's offset, you know.
Yeah, like, God, I can't believe this. This broad, jeez, who grows their hair that long? And then want to make a movie about it? Oh man.
Thor: The Dark World, that came out. Was that last year then? Was it 2 years ago?
I feel like it was 2 years ago. I feel like.
But then you've been. I know. Maybe
it was like 1.5 years ago. I don't remember.
Yeah. But you did Broadway. You did a play.
I did this musical called First Date. Was living in New York. Did that for about 6 months. Loved that. It was. Yeah. I mean, it was crazy intense. I It was the most difficult and therefore most rewarding experience I've ever had as an actor, yeah. Doing 8 shows a week for 6 months with no, it's unrelenting.
That's like,
I actually heard
pure adrenaline. Like, that's gotta be the biggest come down when you're done doing that, right?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, certainly the first few months, and then you kind of find that groove a little bit. And also, you know, it also depends on your audience that night. I mean, there's so much stuff that goes into it, but, no, it's just like, it's a massive, like, it wasn't a physical challenge to me as much as it was a mental challenge, because it was a comedy. It was a musical comedy. It was really like, it was an hour and a half with no intermission, and there was only 7 people. It took place in one restaurant. And so it kind of felt like we were doing an hour and a half sitcom with music.
Okay.
That's what I felt like. You know, very jokey, lots of one-liners and stuff. And so that was a lot of fun. But, you know, you if you tell the same joke for a month
– yeah.
It's interesting, and it's challenging. You tell it for 2 months, and you're like, I'm pretty over this joke at this point. But then you tell it for 6 months, and you know, you're forgetting what's even funny about it anymore.
Yeah.
The cadence is weird. The punchline is weird. You're like, where was this in rehearsal? What was funny? Because your mind just gets so messed up and all that stuff. And for me, anyway, because I'm always shooting for... I want the biggest eruptive laughter that I can, and then I don't know. It was a weird, weird challenge, but I'm glad that I did it.
Yeah, that's got to be interesting too, because you know the joke, and it starts off. You know, obviously, you know, laughter tends to be the for audiences. It's like a reflex. You know, it's like a protecting. You know, I can't think of the word I'm looking for, but it's so. To get that, the biggest laugh, you go through the mathematics and the equation of the cadence and the delivery. So after so many of those shows, you tend to forget which part of the delivery is funny.
I think for me more so it stopped being funny to me.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, this might get a little deep into like comedy philosophy, but I feel like if it's not funny to you, I mean, you know, as a comic, if it's not funny to you, it's not going to be funny for the people, right?
Yeah.
So if you tell the same joke over and over and over again, it's not you're not surprised by it.
Correct.
You're not surprised by your delivery. So you'll start screwing with it a little bit. So you'll be like, I might hold it a little bit longer here, or be a little tighter here.
Exactly.
So it's newer and fresher and funnier for you.
Yes.
And you can still get laughs with it.
Yes.
You're like, oh, wow. So now you're like kind of playing jazz with comedy a little bit and an audience. But then you get to a place where even that, like every iteration of that possible delivery has been used.
Yeah.
And then you're trying to go back to where you started. And like, I don't even know where I started. I don't remember what was funny about this to begin with, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's getting a little like...
Believe it or not, that's our side podcast, dissecting Broadway comedies.
No, just the philosophy of comedy.
Philosophy of comedy.
Comicosophy. I don't know. Philomic. I don't know. We'll work
comedy.
On that.
It's a philomedy.
Philomedy.
That sounds like a disease.
Sounds like diseases.
Type 1 or type 2?
Dan made it!
I've been here the whole time, but completely silent.
And cloaked, apparently.
Yes.
Like a weird predator.
That's amazing. Yeah. we were predators and you were covered in mud.
Exactly.
Something like that. Yeah. That's right. That's
right. What was the predator sound? It's like, right? That was it?
Austin Powers sound.
Yeah, or like Chewbacca when he's like very gently snoring or something.
When you pet the
was what it was.
Yes.
But like faster, more rapid clicking.
Oh, man,
rapid clicking.
So good.
Yes.
Man.
You're one ugly motherfucker.
Get to the chopper.
I watched that, like, it's been a while since I seen it, and I watched it maybe 2 months ago for the first time in maybe 8 years or whatever. And I forgot, like, I knew the story and the plot, but I forgot how much of, like, bad guys in those movies were always, like, business dudes. Carl Weathers was literally, he was the asshole business dude. He was like, God damn, I need to be the bad guy. Like,
Or like Aliens.
Just play along?
Like Paul Reiser was the bad guy in Aliens. Like, Ripley, let's not just nuke the planet because I'm here on a business mission. And hey, you know, if people need to get aliens busting out of their chest.
Man.
And it's like, what?
Paul Reiser, like, you watch Aliens and, or even, you know...
Even in Die Hard.
It's
Hans Bubby.
Hans Bubby.
I can be your white knight.
So...
They're all busy businessmen.
Well, it was just the 80s. Yeah. It was the 80s. Cocaine driven business. Yeah, that's exactly. All it was.
It was an easy trope. And, yeah. It still works.
A trope is already being dropped. The word trope has been dropped already in this podcast.
The Wayland Corporation and Aliens was built on coke. It was a drunken night with the Waylands just doing blow at a holiday party, thinking, what can we start? What kind of company can we start? Yeah.
So is that just liquid coke that comes out of the androids when they kill them?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Yeah. Which is why they're all so just like hyper aware.
Yeah.
Like every android. That's how you can do that.
Yeah, that's how you can do knifey spoon so fast.
Knifey spoon over the hand thing so fast. It's like he is just madly coked out. His blood is literally liquid cocaine.
He's done so much cocaine he thinks he's a robot.
Yeah. his head stays alive even after death. He's not a droid. He's a human being. But he's done so much coke he can actually come back to life. That's amazing. That's what we learned today, folks.
Yeah, with the truth behind Lance Henriksen.
So as literally we we got here, we literally just started. We didn't even get we were just chit chatting here. I just introduced Zach and we were talking about
awesome
projects. As as our listeners know, we like to start off every show with the guest providing either a fun fact about themselves or something you learned recently.
Well, I gave that a lot of thought, and two things. One, I have a really big mouth, and basically everybody already knows everything about me. That's not true. And the other thing is, I don't know that I really learned anything today other than the fact that Johnny Manziel is going to be starting for the Browns this weekend.
Really?
Which is, yes.
This is the first time he's starting all season,
First time he's starting all season. He got put in. Hoyer was kind of shitting the bed a little bit a couple weeks ago. And they put Johnny in, and immediately he ran for a touchdown. It was a pretty decent rush, too. Like, I don't know. It was probably like 15 yards or something. Like, it was a pretty good run. And then, but it was a little dodgy because he also threw an interception as well. He definitely got sacked. His count was wrong. They hiked the ball before he was ready for it. And then he got like sacked and, or not just sacked. I think it was a safety. I think it was in the end zone. But anyway, so it was kind of an up and down game. And then they were like, well, that's not quite enough for us to believe that Manziel's the guy. So we're going to bring Hoyer back in. And then the Browns they should have won last weekend, and then the Colts came back to win that game, which was just really sad.
I could not believe how many points they gave up over the course of just a single quarter.
Yeah,
25 points in a quarter? That's crazy.
And by the way, I'm a Luck fan. I'm a Colts fan. I got family from Indiana, so good for them. But there's something about the Browns who have just sucked so bad for so long.
Certain.
And I was like, come on, guys, you can do this.
This is your time. You have a lead.
Yeah.
You have such a lead.
But now it's like massive divisional, like it's against the Bengals this Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
So, and they're, their division is so, it's Ravens, Steelers, Browns, Bengals, and they're all like a game apart. So
exactly.
I don't know what's going to happen. But
and their coach, the Bengals coach, just called Manziel a midget.
Yeah, that's basically what happened.
Yeah.
So today I learned that Manziel's going to start, and that kind of made me happy because I really want to see Johnny Football. I feel like people gave him a lot of shit.
Hold on, he's the Johnny because I don't watch sports, but I hear the name Johnny Football.
Johnny Football.
Not to be confused with Johnny Utah, who played football at Utah, who became an FBI agent. Although I would love to see a Point Break spoof with Johnny Manziel. That would be amazing.
Shared cinematic Johnnyverse.
Johnny Football's helmet, like in hockey, they can paint. What if like in football you could paint the helmets like the goalies. And Johnny Football painted like a dead president's face on his helmet,
or just Keanu Reeves' portrait,
Keanu Reeves'
like Sears portrait, like his head, like his hand underneath his chin, like what is
like
that?
A weird space background?
Yeah, totally.
Just a little
with
like Keanu
the Howling Wolves or something. So I learned that, but no, I will let people in on a secret about me, or not a secret, but something that very few people know. Because, it doesn't really come up in conversation often. When I learned how to tie my shoes, I never learned the kind of appropriate way to tie shoes or the normal loop, swoop, and pull way of tying shoes.
Okay.
I learned bunny ears.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I've used bunny ears to this day. I have never switched over to the loop, swoop, and pull, which is, I know, the more adult, mature thing to do. You could trace this all the way back to my stunted growth, perhaps. I don't know. I don't know this for sure. But I have been bunny earsing it my entire life. I'm a 34-year-old man, and I bunny ears my shoelaces. There you go, people. Boom. Mic drop.
I think that's still a step above if you're just like, I don't know how to do it, and I have to use Velcro.
I
Or mommy, or excuse me, honey, friend, or anyone, could you do this?
Exactly.
Can you come wipe me? Come wipe me.
Come wipe me, please.
Yeah.
Most of, unless they're Chuck Taylors of mine, I have them already pre-tied.
You have them tied.
Slip-ons. I just.
Oh, you just slip all your shoes on.
All my shoes, yeah. Unless they're Chuck Taylors.
Just slowly destroy
all
the backs.
Slowly yeah. destroy yeah. the backs, because tying, it's like typing www. On, you know, when you go to a web browser, that little bit of a second adds up, man.
Yeah,
and
but
life is short. It's like I was on a thing today, a website my buddy sent me, and it's like it was a Warren Buffett thing, and it's like how much? What's your annual income? And this is how fast Warren Buffett makes it. Now, just think
Lord.
About how much money he's making while you're too busy doing your bunny ears when you could have just slipped your shoes on.
Right. Right. I do find it interesting, though, that you compared it to a technology that we don't even have to do anymore, because
exactly.
you don't
That's
have to type in
That's
www.
What I mean. Yeah. I mean, so instead of typing www, you can just type in that web address. So I just put my shoes on. I
did you just W it? You did, didn't
you? Www.
Yeah.
Www. Try. I mean, it's faster than saying W. It's all about
this. This podcast brought to you by Expedience. not Expedia. Expedience.
How much time can you save in your regular day?
All the time you've saved, you could tie your shoes three times.
Yeah.
I learned the bunny ears, and I can't remember the last time I've done the bunny ears. I'll do like the loop, swoop, and pull on occasion for like the chucks, but yeah. I'm trying to remember even how, like, I feel like I'm such a clumsy person. If I already, okay, now I have the two bunny ears. If I tried doing through the holes, I would lose one of the bunny ears.
Well, see, that's why I would always screw up with the loop, swoop, and pull, because I would loop one, and then I'd go to swoop this one around, yeah. but then you still have to hold on to it
yes.
before you pull. I was like, how does anyone yeah. do this? Yeah. This is sorcery. when I was a child, and still now. But no, the bunny ears is literally so just like with tennis shoe, where just like with you know the single yeah. lace, you cross them over, you pull under, and you yeah. tie it, and then you just loop those, and you do the exact same thing. It's just yeah. it's the exact same thing, but you do it with the two loops.
Yeah.
And by the way, and why someone when they invented shoelaces didn't just figure that out,
yeah.
make it the easy way? No, they had to make it far more complicated. I do remember specifically where I learned how to tie my shoes for
Absolutely.
The first time,
Tell
which
us.
Was Skating Plus. skating rink in Ventura, California, where I grew up. I was there with, you know, my I was, I don't even know, four, five, I don't know. How old is one when they learn how to tie their shoes?
Something around that age.
Five-ish.
Generally, it's before you learn how to roller skate.
No, not necessarily, because you could still be roller skating. Your parents could bring you to the roller skating rink, tie your roller skates,
yeah,
and send you out there.
All right, I suppose. Seems dangerous as a small child, but...
As a small child?
As a small child.
As a small child. Child.
Yes.
Well, no. Yes and no. I mean, we're also made out of, like, indestructible rubber at that point.
yeah.
Like, you could fall and fall
so
and fall and fall
yeah.
and fall.
Bang your head against a table and you're, yeah. like, healed the next
I'm
day.
I'm okay.
I grew back.
So I was there. Yeah, I was at Skating Plus and learning how to tie my shoes for the first time.
Wow.
Vivid. It's weird, right?
Yeah.
The memories that we have. It's like, wow, it just brings you right back.
It's so weird how, like, you do have that processing of your brain of what memories you specifically remember exact time and place, and then others that are way more important or just, you know, more fun or whatever. You just can't, like, I
yeah.
can't remember when I tied my shoes, but there's vivid memories of like you know, like GIFs. I remember, you know, animated GIFs of my childhood that I can just remember like a good 18 seconds or like Vine videos, you know, or whatever of specific frames,
yeah.
like almost like a reel to reel. It plays
yeah.
back in my brain
yeah.
of just like a first person shooter reel to reel. Me sitting on a big wheel, He-Man big wheel in my we had like a little walkway sidewalk from my house to the actual sidewalk. And I remember sitting on that just watching my brother and friends ride their bicycles around the block, trying to count how many times they could ride around the block.
It was, the you know, things that challenge us when we're a
yeah.
kid. How many times do you think we can go around the block?
Yeah,
I don't
right.
know. Let's try.
6 hours later.
Yeah. What are we at? I lost count.
I've not learned how to count that high yet.
We're
tie my shoes.
Perhaps we should have considered this earlier.
where do we go from here? Do you tell me something you learned today? Or
no,
you
we'll go to
expose yourself
I have
more
a fact
than you
here.
Already have?
Yeah. We'll go to a fact here. Here's a fun fact. Zach, you're a gamer.
Yes.
You like
oh,
to play
yeah.
the games and all that.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Dan plays the games, and Aristotle here plays the games.
I used to play the games. I play the games on occasion, but I'm not, you know,
Do you need a quarter to continue?
Yeah. I used to play games. The last system I bought for myself was the Nintendo 64. I've since bought every other system, but then I walked out of the place on the day they went on sale and sold it for twice as much.
Like, no.
I would wait in line for like the Wii's and all
you're
of those systems.
You're a flipper?
Absolutely, yeah. Dude. I'm a flipper, man. I would wait in the line and because all my friends are into that stuff, so they would wait in lines anyways. So I would always just wait with them because what else am I going to do? And I would either just sell my place in line for like $200-$300, or I would actually buy the system and then walk out and then flip it.
Wow.
Because,
you know.
You're a one-man black market.
Yeah. You know, hey, I had to wear a big, big trench coat just to fit those things underneath.
You need like a reinforced
hey,
one.
Hey, want a Wii? Huh? Yeah.
I need a second coat for this Wii Xbox you? One.
But here's a fun fact about Pac-Man. Every time Pac-Man eats a regular dot, he stops moving for one frame, which is 1/60th of a second, slowing his progress by roughly 10%, which is just enough for the following ghosts to overtake him. So every time he eats a dot, he lags just enough
what?
To where that's why the ghosts can always catch up.
So what? The moral of Pac-Man is
don't fucking eat.
Deny yourself food yeah. and you will never die.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you'll just be stuck on the same map for the rest yeah, exactly. of the game. I mean,
which it's interesting how it's such a loaded,
really,
it's such a loaded thing because that's you need to clear the map.
Where did you hear this?
Reddit. It was posted on there.
They're not allowed to lie. It's in
yeah,
terms
no
of service
lies
agreement.
On Reddit. Yeah. That's yeah. bunk, dude. Why would they? Why
because
would
the
program?
The
hold on a second. Why would the programmers make it that Pac-Man would slow down every time he ate a dot? Hear me out.
Yep,
hear me out. Instead of just coding the ghosts to move faster.
Fair enough. I mean, it could be a combination of that, though.
And maybe it was just easier to
maybe
code
algorithm.
That in there because it was still.
I want somebody listening to this podcast who works for
Namco.
Namco, thank you. I was
going
to say Capcom.
Bandai.
Yeah, Namco Bandai. And has a time machine.
I want some proof of this because I am opposed to this fact. Yeah. I do not believe
right.
it to be a fact.
All right.
Do you guys know what the names of the ghosts are?
Winken, Blinken, Schwartz, and Groucho. No,
close.
I don't know.
That was those were their bar mitzvah names. They are in English. They are Inky, Blinky, Pinky, and Clyde. But in Japan, they were Fickle, Chaser, Ambusher, and Stupid.
I was going to make a joke about it being cried, but
no.
Sorry.
Well, they were given those names because those are the kind of personalities they programmed into
yeah.
the ghosts.
Yeah,
because
they all have really distinct personalities,
yeah.
those ghosts.
Well, one will chase yeah. you, one tries to ambush you, one's just super
Hold on.
Dumb.
I guess it's been like, I've never really thought about it that way, okay? Maybe, is that
they
really
have different AI patterns.
Oh, so they don't all just try and chase you from behind.
Some will try to like head you off at the pass. Others will just chase you. Stupid is just dumb.
Huh.
And
see, like I love
one?
Miss Pac-Man's one of my go-to games to play at the arcade when I go. Like,
oh yeah,
she's
a babe.
There's a cool barcade downtown that's really cool called 82. But I guess I'm just the dumb fun game player. Like I just want to play this game and see how far I can get. I don't like I've never really noticed that the ghosts actually do different things.
I don't know that a lot of people do.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't put it past Namco to have programmed it that way, but it's. I feel like as someone who's played Pac-Man, Miss Pac-Man for many, many years, I have like a multi. I've lost myself. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
I can hear you.
Oh, that's so weird. I somehow cannot hear myself. Oh, there I am. I'm back.
Oh, here you are.
I wasn't gone.
And we're back.
I wasn't gone, and now I'm really not gone. Except that I'm really gone. So, yeah, I have a multicade at my house, one of those, like, sit down guys.
Oh, nice.
But it's one of the, like, newer refurbished ones, so it's got. Like
the
every,
sit down, so it's a cocktail.
It's
machine?
A sit down cocktail machine.
No,
yeah.
Those
it's got all.
Awesome.
It's got all the. It's got all the Pac-Mans. Pac-Man? I don't know. Okay. I don't know what the correct nomenclature for that would be. All the Pac-Mans. All the Donkey. All the Pac. Yeah,
the Pac-Guys.
Pac-Guys. All the Donkey Kongs. It's got Frogger, Dig Dug, Galaga, Space Invaders. It's got a whole bunch,
yeah,
right?
Awesome.
And my favorite, you know, it's interesting too because they used to bundle Galaga, Miss Pac-Man. Like, that was the
classic.
Yeah,
that was like the classic.
Like, you would
machine.
See that back in the day. So, this one has both of those, obviously. But I love Miss Pac-Man, love Galaga, love Frogger, love Dig Dug.
Dig Dug,
it's got Mr. Do on it. Mr. Do was a weird game.
Mr.
It's got Burger Time, which is also kind of a weird game.
My brother
game.
Used to have the
catch
Mr.
all these
Do.
Toppings in this weird meat sewer.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Meat sewer. Pitfall.
It doesn't have pitfall.
Doesn't have pitfall.
Does not have pitfall.
Does it
no.
have joust?
It does not have joust. No, does not have joust either.
Well, then I
but
don't.
Then I don't want it.
Burn it.
But yeah. So anyway, point is, like, I've played. I've played a lot of Ms. Pac-Man, Ms. Pac-Man, and I consider myself pretty decent, but I can only imagine that the guys who are like the world champion, like Pac-Man, like I don't even know that they're necessarily really. Here's me talking out of school completely, but I would imagine that they're more focused on their path as Pac-Man than they are about I think Pinky's going to make a left right now, because I don't know that there's that much. Like, I would imagine there's a lot of randomness in what the ghosts are doing too.
It has to be, especially when you're getting after the. You want to the real main point is the score.
Yeah.
So you want to eat all the ghosts you can, and you also want to get all the fruits and the
you need to get all the power.
Totally.
Fruits.
You need
to get all of those. So it's like,
and the trick that I learned a long time ago from somebody who I esteemed as a Pac-Man aficionado, who I'm just rambling. You want to go into like the corners where the power pellets are. And just trap and just like lure them to you, and then grab it and go get all the guys as fast as you can. Yeah. But as a kid, I was like, I'm gonna go grab it, and then I go chase them, and I'd get like one.
Yeah.
No, dumb move, Zach. Dumb move.
Dumb move, stupid Zach. Go roller skate. Go roller skate the entire shoes.
What's our next fun fact?
Our next fun fact has a little holiday fact, but it also ties back into your little credits here. Zach, you were in the Alvin and the Chipmunks, the Squeakquel. The Squeakquel?
Squeakquel.
The Squeakquel.
Yeah.
The number two.
The Skeetwool would have been Skeet. No.
It's just
Chipmunks After Dark.
Yeah.
Well, my brain was going to them playing Ski Ball.
Oh, well, so, there we go.
No.
Or Skeet Shooting.
Yeah.
Skeet Shooting.
Or Skeet Shooting.
Pull?
Just launching Chipmunks.
Wait a minute! David Seville is finally fed up with Alvin and them, so he's just like, he's drunk, smoking a joint, and he's got...
David, what are you doing?
He's got that, from the cartoon, that old, the old lady next door that...
Yeah.
She's the one
pulling. Yeah. He's like, you think I'd just take this forever? The high voices and the singing?
And then it cuts to him done, and he's just like... What have I done? So it's the Christmas season, and ties us in a little bit, the Chipmunks here. The Alvin and the Chipmunks, if you don't know, there was obviously the cartoon in the 80s, but they originated as novelty records by a gentleman by the name of Ross Bagnasarian, who recorded under the alias of David Seville. The very first incarnation of the Chipmunks were... in theory, the science behind the recording was on the first recording David Seville's was The Witch Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah, ting-tang, wana-wana, bing-bang was...
Grammys.
Was a sped-up version of Ross Bagnasarian's voice for that song. He used that same method of the recording in a slower tone and then speeding it up to create the Alvin and the Chipmunks. And the very first... recording Foley with the Chipmunks credited was
Christmas.
Exactly.
Christmas time is here. Yeah.
It was the Chipmunk song, Christmas Don't Be Late, and it was first was released in 1958, and it featured the singing skills of the Chipmunk trio. And one of the phrases on that song was Alvin was wishing for a hula hoop because that was the year it came out.
Oh, yeah. It became a number one single.
Number one single.
Yeah.
It earned the Chipmunk song won 3 Grammys, and it was the nominated record of the year, and that was the only, for as far as sales go with that, it was the like the last time Christmas debut song reached the number one for that long.
Your no move, kidding. Michael Bublé.
He's on a roll right now. He's on a roll.
He's at every Starbucks in the country.
He is at every Starbucks in the country.
Sorry, Nora.
Dude, you know when you know your Starbucks albums.
Yeah. Oh, I like them.
It's amazing. Like if you can get into a Starbucks, like that's bigger than a Sam Goody.
Absolutely.
If that ever existed anymore.
Perfect example. Perfect example. I'm working on creating a card game. In the vein of like Cards Against Humanity, I'm working on inventing a card game, and I was reading up on various types of games, and that's how Cranium started. Cranium, they started releasing they released their games sellable in Starbucks.
No way.
And they blew up, and that helped, you know, get them, you know, mass popularity in, in other
and then
niche
bought up
stores
by Milton
like
Bradley
that.
Or whatever. Yeah. Back to the Chipmunks. So, yes, having done the Squeakquel and worked with the Chipmunks, fine fellows.
Yeah.
The Bagdasarian family is still the sole copyright. They own and control and I say that all, by the way, in all love, like I don't mean control in a bad way. I mean, like, they have been looking after that brand since the beginning.
Heirloom.
It's a family heirloom,
keeping it in the family,
and they have done such a good job. In keeping the heart of it and keeping the tone of it. And they're a really lovely family. Yeah. Like, it was fascinating because, like, doing the film and meeting the family, you know, it would be the classic, like, Hollywood thing of, like, you know, something that's so pure and so kind and so nice and so lovely as a brand, and then meeting the people behind it, and they're like, oh, really horrible, whatever. But they're actually really lovely people who really believe in the purity of what the Chipmunks stood for back then and even now. And all this stuff I learned from them, you know, like, they have, you know, when they sold those albums, by the way, you know, talking about how, like, the Starbucks connection now, that's kind of what they did back in the day. There was a lot of singles.
Oh, yeah.
And you wouldn't go to a record store necessarily get them. You'd get them at Sears. Like, they'd just be sitting with, like, the cigars or the ladies' garments. Like, oh, and also buy this album on the way out. Like,
the
literally.
Perfect underwear music.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Like, it was amazing how they would, like, sell that stuff and a lot of door-to-door stuff. And, like,
it was just
crazy.
Like the small 45s in the case. And it was just, you know.
Yeah.
It was that thing you bought. I remember having – I think it wasn't in the 80s. I mean, it may have been, but I'm fairly certain it was something even older, because I had, when I was younger, I had a record of the Chipmunks singing the Beatles.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it was like, it was old. It seemed way older than in the 80s, and because I remember the art and everything was still the old art instead of the new art, because in the 80s there was that cartoon.
Yeah,
Zach, I'm sure you remember.
Totally.
You know,
I remember it.
The
and the Chipmunk movie.
With the
where they go around. Yeah, the Chipmunks and the Chipettes, and they're both, like, hired by that evil couple.
To smuggle diamonds.
Diamonds and drugs. Diamonds and cash.
Something.
To do the switcheroo. Yeah, I don't know.
Right.
The plot was a little thin.
Balloon
but,
yeah. And they had, like, the arcade game or whatever, right? Wasn't where they chase, or it started with that. They were playing a balloon game, I think, at the beginning of the
maybe
movie.
Yeah, but that was where the grandma came in.
Yes.
What was her name? And I can't remember if they used that same name for in the Squeakquel, because basically in the plot of the Squeakquel, Dave gets hurt, and then then the Chipmunks are going to stay with Aunt, forgive me,
Dorothy,
whatever. And then she gets hurt, and I'm like the nephew who's, like, staying with her, and then she gets hurt. Now I'm like the total burnout, you know, video game playing, like, can't take care of myself, let alone three chipmunks kind of guy. Art imitating life. but I totally remember the Chipmunk movie. That was fun. Like, at that time in my life, I was like, that's a fun movie.
I remember it vividly, seeing it, because, you know, I mean, we're pretty much the same age. I'm 32, and it's just one of those things that it, especially with that show, the, you know, the cartoon, the just the Elvin side, the song holds so much just in my nostalgia in my heart as a kid,
a
Chipmunk rock band and all that. And then that movie came out, and I remember watching it. It's just those, you know.
And all the places they'd go in the world, and then they were like.
I'll tell you what, that was the first time I vividly remember hearing, what is that song? That song when they're on the middle of the volcano and there's the fire. Woolly Bully.
Oh, Woolly Bully. Yeah,
that
was
the first time I
when
remember.
When Theodore was like a god, but then they were going to sacrifice him.
Yep. That's the first time I remember hearing.
Woolly Bully.
Yes. And then there was like, oh.
Had it the medic. Yeah, totally.
First
totally,
time I remember that song.
Oh, good times. Good times.
Yeah. Good times and great oldies. Woolly Bully. So that's some fun Christmas Chipmunk facts here.
Yeah,
and I guess while we're talking about Christmas, Dan, do you want to? Do you have the facts pulled up?
I do have the facts pulled up in front of me. So speaking of Christmas, which Christmas fact in particular? You want to talk about mistletoe?
We can talk about mistletoe. We can talk about the Charlie Brown Christmas.
Oh yeah, let's stay on the topic of animated Christmas specials.
Sure.
So a Charlie Brown Christmas, wonderful special. I just listened to a really great story on NPR recently about a letter writing campaign that people started in order to get Charles Schulz to include Franklin, the first black character. And it was a huge deal at the time. He, like, Charles Schulz got a lot of hate mail from people who were outraged that they were including this character in Peanuts. Charles Schulz was originally afraid at first because he thought his black friends would feel like he was just
catering to them or patronizing them.
That's the word he used, patronizing them. And they talked to a bunch of black parents. They sent him those letters saying, like, we would actually much prefer if you had a black character in Peanuts. And so he created Franklin, who they said was a little boring at first, but they didn't want to rock the boat. They just wanted to make him another kid. The first time you see him, he's just having a conversation with Charlie Brown. They're not like, hey, you're that cool new black kid. But Charlie Brown Christmas is a musical animated TV special. It was based on Charles M. Schulz's Peanuts strip, produced by Lee Mendelsohn, directed by Bill Melendez, and it made its debut on CBS on December 9th, 1965. It was originally commissioned and sponsored by the Coca-Cola Company, written over a period of several weeks, and animated on a very shoestring budget over the course of 6 months. When it premiered, a lot of people didn't believe in it. They thought it wasn't going to do well. They didn't, you know, because it was dealing with, they really focused on sort of more adult writing, but with children's voices. They wanted to make something intelligent, not just animated schlock. And a lot, as a result, people were like, this is going to bomb. This is going to be terrible. But they didn't have anything else to show in its place, so they put it on air on CBS. So CBS, December 9th, 1965, at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, preempting the Munsters. Was viewed by 45% of people who watched TV that night.
Yes.
And, wait, how many? How, what?
45% of people who owned a television watched
Ready
that.
For this? An estimated 15.5 million people watched that.
It was number two in the ratings, right behind
two.
Bonanza. Great show.
I mean, that was also, like, just to... You always, like, even in the 80s when Cheers was a thing, you know, when the Cheers finale was around, you forget, you think of, like... You know, market share or whatever now of, like, you know, getting 3 million views.
Oh,
or, you
no
know,
way.
How huge
yeah,
that is.
No.
Even, you know, some talk shows, you know, them getting in, you know, like 700,000 and they win the night. But back then there was like three channels and that's
oh, yeah. And that's it. And by the way, and you had no option to DVR that
yeah,
stuff.
Exactly.
So the television used to be just like the radio started.
Yeah.
As kind of this central location of entertainment for a family where you would gather around and you would listen to radio programs and like, oh my gosh, what is this thing?
Yeah.
This thing where we have voices that like tell us stories.
Exactly.
That before it was like grandma and grandpa or mom and dad and that's it. It was books and bed and
and
sitting
silence.
Around a campfire. Yeah, that's about it. As far as just entertainment is concerned. And then once the radio came out, then it was like, whoa, we got music being delivered to us via these weird waves of electricity or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then to bring pictures to that, and I mean, and what's fascinating too is if you think about it, I mean, there's so many fascinating things about it, but this has only been the last half a century, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, for all of human history before that, none of this stuff was really even an option.
Yeah.
And now, if you think about it, because it's really sad, now it has taken over so much of our lives. That it's like we would rather live vicariously through these people that we see on this magical little box than do the shit that we should be doing in our own life.
Yeah.
And I'm guilty of this as well. And especially when video games came about.
Because
I don't give a shit about like living my life through The Real Housewives.
No.
But I'll go jump on Destiny for hours being like, I get to kill aliens!
Which
I could never do in real life, but I get to do it in video games. And it's like, oh my God, and who do I get to brag to this about? The other people who are also doing the same thing.
8-year-olds.
Yeah.
To that
point, I think it's really just like sometimes you step back, you're just like, what the hell is going on here? If you're playing a game like The Sims where you're literally controlling smaller versions of yourself, making them shower while you language,
while you language in your own
use the bathroom while you shit yourself, making them eat food while you slowly starve.
And it's interesting too, a fun fact here about how like how back in those days, even in today's day, you know, how celebrities or whatever can influence things. Like, you know, John F. Kennedy single-handedly, you know, put the kibosh on the fedora. You know, before Kennedy...
Tell that to Reddit.
Well, I mean, now it's came back, you know, like... the fedora is a thing now, but back in the day, you know, you like even watching Mad Men and all that, it starts with all the guys, you know, they would wear a suit and tie and a hat, and all the presidents did that, and then Kennedy was the first president to not wear you know, fedoras or top hats of the sort with his suits. So that kind of put the sales down for that. Now, with the Charlie Brown Christmas, a lot of the Christmas trees at the time were the popularity was those aluminum, you know, the shiny, the kitschy types of things.
Oh.
The popularity of the special practically eliminated the aluminum Christmas tree, which was a fad from 1958 to 1965, when the special portrayed it negatively. By 1967, just 2 years after the special first aired, they were no longer being regularly manufactured.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So Coca-Cola probably – what if there's like a conspiracy like Coca-Cola commissioned that because they wanted to put
they wanted cheaper aluminum for their cans.
We want that aluminum for our cans. Brown, you get me this business.
That's so funny.
But going back to your point about like a market share and stuff. It's really fascinating to when you really kind of sit down and think about the fact that, you know, because like Nielsen ratings, everybody gives Nielsen ratings so much shit nowadays. And yeah, by the way, nowadays it doesn't really mean much. But back in the day, you could essentially understand who was watching what by doing kind of rough polling. You could be like, oh, we went to 1,000 homes and 80% of them were watching Cheers. So we're going to say 80% of the nation was watching Cheers. And it was pretty accurate at the time because you had three options, like you're saying, ABC, NBC, and CBS, and there was no option to record it, and really until the VCR came out, and then even then, it wasn't like a lot of people were going, oh, I'm going to make sure and record, because that was a pain in the ass.
Absolutely.
You couldn't even program like, things to not flash.
And, I mean, VCRs were like $1,200 when they came out. You know, they were super expensive.
Yeah, for sure. So to think that a television show, you used to have such a rapt audience.
Absolutely.
You could, and that's why the television made so much money in commercials back in the day, because they were like, 80% of the nation is about to, you know, make a choice about Coke or Pepsi. So what do you want it to be? You want to be the choice of a new generation or what?
Yeah.
What do you want?
Absolutely. And it's like, and that was also, you know, before even like VCRs or DVRs, where now a lot of people, they'll fast forward through commercials, or as soon as the commercial comes on, they get on their phone.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, we didn't have smartphones back then.
You didn't have all this other
entertainment. Yeah, full on, man. That's crazy.
It's like you said, it's only in the last 50 years that really, you know,
that any of this stuff started that ball rolling, and now what it is today, and the entertainment machine, and it's all like there's so many bells and whistles and colors and sounds and distractions, and it's like, what do you do? You know? And then I look at my life and go, I could have accomplished so much.
I know.
I could have accomplished so much if I didn't have either a remote control or a console controller in my hands. I'm aware that I'm saying all these things, and I'll probably go back and play some
games. No, of course.
Like, you could have accomplished so much. Here's a fun segue. Like, scaling a mountain.
Oh, scaling a mountain.
Another fun fact.
Let me ask you this, Zach. How would you – the tallest mountain in the world, what do you know what it is? The tallest mountain in the world.
Well, I mean, I feel like the way you're asking me is a trick question.
Well, because
the tallest mountain in the world – as far as I know, is still Mount Everest.
Oh, okay, see. Everest. No,
but this, let me ask you a few questions before you either correct me or tell me that I'm right. Is there semantics going on here? Is it the highest? Is that considered the highest peak in the world, but not the tallest mountain because it's a part of a range?
I feel like, if I remember correctly, we had a fact a while ago early on about the highest peak technically being like, I think, one of the mountains of Hawaii or whatever, because that also from the ocean floor up to the thing. But that's semantics. No, what I was getting at is it's Mount Everest.
Yeah, or followed by K2.
Technically.
Right, but continue.
Mount Everest is actually how it's pronounced, because Mount Everest is named after the Welsh surveyor. It's named after the Welsh surveyor and geographer Colonel Sir George Everest. He was a surveyor general of India from 1830 through 1843, and in 1865, Mount Everest was named in his honor despite his objections by the Royal Geographical Society.
No way!
Yeah. Wow. Now, Sir George Everest's surname is pronounced Everest, with Eve pronounced as the woman's name, but everybody refers to the mountain as Everest. When it's technically, if it's named after that gentleman, it should be pronounced as Everest.
It does make sense. That's just how we parse the language. Yeah. Like we see the ever.
Yeah.
That's kind of blowing my mind right now.
Yeah. Sorry,
we've
George.
We've been mispronouncing that the entire time.
Sorry, George.
We named it after him, and we're not even getting it properly.
You know what? Well, but then he got his wish, because he was
objected.
No, don't name it after me. And then... oh, you're going to call it wrong. Okay, that's perfect. Fine. That's fine. That's perfect.
It's like Young Frankenstein, Frodrick, or yeah, like yeah. Young. It's Frankenstein.
It's Frankenstein. It's Igor.
It's Ivris.
Yeah. You know, the story that I heard about K2 was that K2 got its name because when they discovered it, they thought it was 2 kilometers higher or something like that than the Everest or Everest, as I've come to find out. And then they were incorrect, but the name stuck. Although 2 kilometers is a lot.
It was given the name K2, I believe, because it was the second... It was like the second peak in the range, or like the second mountain within this range.
Huh.
Let me see.
Yes, the K2 is derived from the notation used by the great trigonometric survey. Thomas Montgomery made the first survey of the Karakoram from Mount Herkomak.
The Karakoram range. It's the second peak that they measured.
Yes.
Oh, all right. So, well, that clears that up.
Yeah, and it's so the K stands for that Karakoram. Yeah, the range. That's the range. The range is the Karakoram range, and that's the second peak that they measured from K2.
Gotcha.
This is interesting. Although there have been fewer deaths compared to those on Mount Everest, the proportion of those killed to the number of people who've tried climbing K2 is significantly higher.
Which makes it a deadlier
mountain overall.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah. So I guess more people have just been like, yeah, let's scale Everest.
I'd like my chances of dying to be a little less.
Exactly.
Just a little less. Yeah. Gosh, dude, it's so... I can't even...
It's also pronounced K-2.
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 There's so many just, like, really horrifying stories that come from Everest.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, I was going through Netflix the other day, and there were probably... Because I love watching documentaries.
Oh, yes.
And there were probably, like, a half a dozen in a row of, like... Vanished into thin air, death on the slopes. And it was like
Murder Mountain.
And all of them were like the true story of these people dying, the true story of these people dying, the true story of these people dying. I'm like, good lord, people.
And then cliffhanger.
The people who live to tell their true story, then died.
Then died. Oh, yeah.
It's so, but I'll tell you, I want to do it. It's on one of my things.
Are you a mountain climber? Do you like that stuff?
I go hiking 3 times a week generally. I'll go like climb, hike and climb boulders and stuff in Malibu and all that.
Dude, Malibu Canyon's awesome back there.
Solstice, Escondido. There's so many good places.
We gotta go.
Are you into that?
Let's go. I'm down.
Fuck yeah, let's do it.
The youngest person
I love it so much
to ever reach the summit was a 13-year-old named Jordan Romero. 13.
I beg your pardon?
The youngest person to ever summit Everest.
13.
Was 13 years
old.
When
did this happen?
This was...
2 days ago. No.
Yeah, that was in May 2010.
Holy
shit. Broke the record that was previously held by the 15-year-old Ming Kipa of Nepal.
Now, how...
Well, see, that I would buy.
Yeah.
When you said a 13-year-old, I was about to say, well, yeah, he was like a Sherpa. Like, he's one of the guys who does this all the time. But that doesn't sound like a Sherpa to me.
No, I'm sure he just had, like, a crazy dad who's just like, yeah, you're super into mountain climbing, right? Yes, Dad.
Yes,
please,
sir.
I just want the Spider-Man figure.
It's at the summit, son. You got to go get it.
Oh, so mom's on top of the mountain?
Oh, jeez. Oh, that's insane.
Yeah.
All right, next fun fact.
Well, let's talk about mistletoe since we stay on the holiday theme.
Poisonous.
Mistletoe, yeah, it is poisonous. It is a parasite, actually.
Yeah. Yep.
Mistletoe, you know, you think it's all that fun kissing stuff, but it sucks water and minerals from plants through this bump called a haustorium that forms on the host tree. And it's only partially parasitic. It's capable of photosynthesis, and so it doesn't make it a true parasite because true parasites take all their nutrients from its host. So it doesn't pay rent so much as it just occasionally is like,
but
hey.
It does wash.
But it sleeps on the couch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it does wash the dishes.
It's your friend that came to visit.
Yeah.
Mistletoe.
For the holidays.
And it's been, in medieval times, it wasn't just a Christmas decoration, but it actually, they used to hang it over home, like doors and stable doors, doors to homes as well, and it would prevent witches and ghosts from entering your domicile.
Interesting.
Yeah, so not just for kissing. And in the South, evidently, reading this from mentalfloss.com, there's a time-honored Southern tradition of fetching mistletoe out of a tall tree by blasting it down with a shotgun.
That's my kind of mistletoe.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, Christmas is over. No Boom. More holiday spirit. Goodwill towards no man.
Anytime I hear mistletoe, I instantly think of Batman Returns with Catwoman and Batman when they're always like, mistletoe is deadly if you eat it.
And
but
this...
it's even deadlier if you mean it.
I do not remember that.
Oh, my God. This is really awesome, actually. In Norse mythology, mistletoe killed a god. Baldur, the son of Odin and Frigg, was felled by an arrow made of mistletoe, the only material that could hurt him.
Okay.
And some people say this is the origin of the kissing tradition, as some retellings say that Frigg revived Baldur and was so happy she commanded anyone who stood under the plant to kiss as a reminder of how love conquered death.
Huh. Interesting. Is Baldur's name the root of Balderdash?
I wonder.
And would he also therefore be the brother of Thor and Loki? I mean, I feel like he would be if he was Odin and Frigg's
son.
Yeah, he's like their half-bro.
There's a Thor 4, the revenge of the mistletoe.
Hey, guys, Baldur's back. Man, what an arrow, right?
It was crazy. What happened to that holiday party?
I don't know. I was like drinking some punch, right? You saw me drinking the punch. So I was drinking the punch. And then there's like this, it was like an arrow, but it was made out of mistletoe. It was weird.
Who invited Hawkeye?
He was there for like 3 seconds, and all he did is stand on the table saying, oh, there's two guys.
Who brings a freaking bow and arrow to a party?
I mean, at least if you're coming to a party, at least look cool if you're going to do nothing. I'm just talking about the Avengers movie. How come on? I mean, Hawkeye was kind of pointless in it.
He is.
He was.
He's supposed to have a much larger role in Age of Ultron.
Like, he did some cool stuff.
Yeah.
Be brainwashed.
He did some cool stuff. He shot a lot of those alien things from the sky his arrows.
I mean, it was a great movie. Believe me. Like, I love it. I'm on board. I love the character Hawkeye. It was just, he didn't, and then same with even like Thor. He shot the lightning up into the hole for like 2 seconds, and then he left.
There was, I had some issues. Look, no, it's tough to find a perfect movie, especially a giant movie like that. I think Joss Whedon did a kick-ass job, all things being considered.
Absolutely.
But dude, there were clearly some things like, Thor can fly.
Yeah.
Why is he not flying up there and knocking all those guys out of the air? Why is he down on the ground fighting with the people who are stuck on the ground? I don't understand it.
He's just following Thorders.
Thorders. Oh, wow. That's good and horrible.
Yeah.
That's goodly horrible.
Here we go. That's we got to film that sketch where it's like hoarders, only it's Thor.
Just a bunch of hammers.
Just a bunch of like... he's like, like, oh, man, that's funny.
I can stop wielding him anytime I want.
Yeah.
Dan, you're funny, man.
Oh, thank you.
You're funny.
Speaking of mythology, if there was mythology, if there was a Poseidon or any of those gods of the ocean, what was their weapon that they would hang on?
Trident.
Yes. Now, Zach, on as our listeners know, and as we mentioned earlier, you and I co-host another show called Picking Favorites.
Picking Favorites.
On the Wolf Pop Network.
On the Wolf Pop Network.
Yes.
Not too long ago, we had with Aisha Tyler, we had our category favorite candies.
Yes.
And Zach here tried, it was favorite candy, and Zach's like, I'm going to have to say Trident gum, which isn't a candy. So I looked into, I got some fun facts about Trident gum here.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. I am still going to argue on some level that it is a candy. And the only reason why is because I do believe that gum is in the candy category. If you're talking about stuff like
confectionaries,
if you're talking about bubble yum, all that stuff, right? So if we're saying that sugared candy or sugared gum is candy, I don't believe there can be a delineation for unsugared gum. Is it sugar that makes candy? Is that the?
If this was like a courtroom, I would agree with that logic, because if you're going to the parent, definition of like confectionery treats made in factories like that, then I would say it would be considered a confection.
If dentists approve of it,
it's not a candy. solid work. And I did, by the way, when I said it, I said, I know this is probably against the rules, but
we got a bunch of that fifth dentist who disagrees with everyone else.
Yeah.
It just so happens they all lived on the same block we were polling. Survey says.
We just didn't want to go to the other part of town. We're like, whatever. We know what dentists.
Where the classy dentists live.
Yeah.
The Trident brand was the first national brand of sugar-free chewing gum in the United States.
Wow.
It was developed by the American Chicle Company in response to medical discoveries linking sugar to dental caries. The original Trident formula contained three enzymes thought to soften dental tartar, but it happened to be sugar. So the original Trident formula that was had these enzymes to prevent tartar, it was sugared.
So Trident is a portmanteau. Three enzymes, Trident, dental.
Exactly.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's Trident.
They don't care about Poseidon or Neptune or any king of the sea.
It's just in reference to the three enzymes that fight tartar. And when the artificial sweeteners became widespread in the early 1960s, the formula was changed to use saccharin instead of sugar, which became the sugar-free Trident that was introduced in 1964. The first sugar-free chewing gum was unveiled in 1964, 1 year prior to
the Voting Rights Act of 1965.
Or also the Charlie Brown.
That too.
Oh yeah, and that too, and a few years before JFK did away with fedoras.
Yes. Man, what a decade!
A lot happening.
A lot of stuff happened in those sixties. Slow down, guys.
What happened in the '60s? What happened in the teens?
The roaring sixties.
The roaring teens.
Oh, I'm glad I finally know what my favorite gum is named after.
Yeah, Trident. It's after Tridental enzymes.
I like it.
I'll take a pack of the. Give me the Winter Fresh and some of the Tridental enzymes, please.
It's coming right up, sir.
Yeah. That's my go-to voice. My go-to voice is the nice lady. I don't know. That's that.
Oh, my. They had quite a few flavors.
Yeah. Read some off, Dan.
The original Trident sugarless gum included flavors like bubblegum, cappuccino, cherry tropical twist, passionberry twist, cinnamon, watermelon twist, minty sweet twist, citrus twist, spearmint, crystal frost, original, peppermint, and wildberry twist.
That's a lot of twisting.
Yeah, I know. Like
a whole lot of twisting
going on.
Lay off
of the twists, okay? Yeah, yeah. Be cool.
Yeah, what is the twist exactly? Cocaine.
Yeah. Here's a twist.
It's
die at the end.
It's watermelon and cocaine.
That's perfect.
What?
Any ailment.
What? You know what's
stop chewing.
What's interesting about the original Trident I just want another piece. Anybody have a Trident?
Make your teeth skinnier. You'll never stop chewing.
Your teeth will start so many businesses.
And I'm the bad guy in every 80s movie. The original flavor of Trident, which is the only flavor I chew, is it's people they put it in their mouth and they think I have a pack on me because that's how I roll. So original flavor, so you think it's like just minty, you think it's like peppermint, right?
Yeah,
except that it's like peppermint and cinnamon.
The
it's a very. In fact, you know what? I'm just going to give you both a piece right now, if people at home,
imagine. Less than 5 calories per piece, no fat, no sodium, carbohydrates, sugars, or proteins.
Yeah. Oh wow! Also, Trident in some countries is sold under the brand Stimerol.
I don't like that name as much. Yeah.
it stands for the three
Stimerol enzymes. See, can you taste it?
Yeah.
It's minty, but it's cinnamon-y.
Yeah.
Cinnamon-y.
It's like, it's very much, yeah, it's kind of like Big Red meets a little bit of
A little Wrigley's.
Yeah.
Cinnamint. Yeah.
Big Wrigley's.
Yeah. You remember Mint-a-Burst or Cinnaburst?
Yeah, I remember those? Yeah.
Everybody thought, there was like the wives' tale that you could chew the wrapper and everything, but it was people
They're trying to get you to like tin foil.
You were just that kid.
I was that kid who believed it because it was like a weird paper
It was a paper wrapper.
Because up until that point, most chewing gum had that foil wrap.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it comes out with this weird see-through cellophane or whatever.
Yeah. You're like, oh, no, you just pop it in with a rubber. Oh, I'll do that. So, no.
I mean,
sucker.
I was 8. I was still tying my shoes with the bunny swoops.
Oh.
Did you guys ever – there you go. Did you guys ever maybe this is a Southern California thing, but I feel like, as a kid, you feel like, oh, it must be everywhere, this, like, kind of wives' tale or whatever, this thought. But when we were kids, we believed, growing up, if you got a wrapper on a Tootsie Roll Pop, you know how it was all little kids doing all the different like, canoeing and all that stuff, and there was one kid that was dressed up like an Indian, and he was shooting an arrow at a star. There was a star on the wrapper.
On the pop.
On the Tootsie Roll Pop.
Yep, yeah.
And we believed as kids, if you got a wrapper that had a star on it, you could trade that in for another Tootsie Roll Pop. Did you know that? Did you ever think that when you were kids?
I believe that, too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. So
I remember hearing that.
Even up in Michigan, then?
Absolutely.
Okay. So it wasn't just a Southern California thing. I desperately would love to know where that came from or if that was ever a real thing. Like maybe Tootsie Roll like had an offer, because we would go, we'd convince the poor hostess down to the Mexican restaurant down in the like the corner of the street where our house was. We would like get Tootsie Roll Pops there, and we'd go back and go, yeah, you need to give us another one.
That's,
and you know,
how
not,
it works.
Not even trying to scam her, but like we fully believed it. And she was like, okay. And like she would give us more Tootsie Roll Pops. And then later on, someone was like, yeah, I don't think that's a real thing.
Yeah, we're losing so much money. According to Snopes, that is false.
Yeah.
The rumor that you could redeem the one with the Indian for free Tootsie Roll started after the introduction of the Pops in 1931. It's been around for a while.
Wow.
They never held any kind of promotion involving the collection or redemption of their wrappers, but the rumors persisted for over 60 years.
That's a crazy rumor.
That's a great rumor. They say the story probably got its start because of the prevalence of contests and prizes associated with the packaging of children's products in an era when the Tootsie Pops were first marketed. And because only about 30% of the wrappers had the Indian on it, so that led to tales about certain wrappers being special. You know, certain thing. It's like with candy bars years later.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, if you get the golden ticket.
Yeah. If I get a golden ticket. Yeah.
Speaking of, while we're talking about Tootsie Pops, this fact was, I believe, on either our first or second episode. The Dum Dum Suckers. Do you remember those Dum Dum Suckers?
Heck yeah. Best part of getting your hair cut as a kid.
Absolutely. Or in Michigan, going to the bank with your mom, you'd get Dum Dum Suckers.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember the question mark?
The mystery flavor.
The mystery flavor?
Yeah.
Do you know what that is? Do you know how they come up with that flavor?
Pineapple.
No. It's the bleed-through of flavors. So when they're in the machine that's manufacturing each pop, say you have a strawberry pop, you stop putting in the strawberry, and then you put in the pineapple or
and
the
then
root beer.
Give, there's going to be a little bleed-through mixture of the overlap.
Yep. That's the mystery flavor.
Genius. Yeah.
Why waste product when we can trick these kids?
Well, not even just trick them, but you're giving them a twist.
Exactly.
You're giving them that strawberry twist.
That's the Wild Berry Original Twist-a-Mint.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man.
That's awesome. Hey, if you were a
Mystery Pop. If you were a Tootsie Roll Pop, would you eat yourself? I know I would. But I'd lick myself silly. How many licks would it take to get to your own set? Who cares? Just lick.
Just lick. Yeah.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that commercial vividly. Mr. Turtle, how many licks does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll center of a Tootsie Pop?
A one.
No. The turtle was
a turtle.
I'm too old. Ask Mr. Owl. Mr. Owl, how many licks does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll center of a Tootsie Pop? Let's find out.
Yeah.
One. A two. A three.
Crunch.
A three.
Yeah. Give it up. And you know why? Because that owl was a businessman.
Yeah. Mr. Owl, where are my parents?
Who apparently did a lot of coke.
He did a lot of coke. He went to college. He did a lot of coke, started a business.
Yeah.
And that business was eating suckers from little children.
And owl, I'm tired of eating mice. I want candy.
And not tried an original.
Yeah. I'm done pooping out bones.
They don't even poop. I think they puke them up.
Oh, do they? Is that
it's
how
like a it's a regurgitation thing.
Owls, you're gross.
You're gross.
You and your Gahooligan friends.
Well, Zach, we're approaching our time on this episode. I appreciate you being here.
One more fun fact?
One more fun fact here.
This is just too much fun.
Sure. All right, here we go. Here's a fun fact about the digital wristwatch. In 1970, the first digital wristwatch with an LED display was mass-produced, called the Pulsar, and was produced by the Hamilton Watch Company. This watch was hinted at 2 years prior when the same company, the Hamilton Watch Company, created a prototype digital watch for Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Oh, wow.
Throughout the 1970s, despite the initial hefty cost of digital watches, the popularity of the devices rose tremendously.
Yeah, they were so popular that they had to start mass producing them because so many people were like, I want that. I want that right now.
And then Casio came around.
Yeah, then Casio came around. Then they got their product on every single Nickelodeon game show. Casio keyboards, Huffy bicycles, wristwatches, you name it. Got it. There's patented Indiglo technology.
Oh, yeah.
I love
and
that.
And Double Dare's physical challenges.
Yeah. If you can find this bicycle in this ear full of wax, it's yours. I'm Mark Summers, and this really bums me out because I have OCD and hate being dirty.
Well, how sad is that, too?
Yeah, I know. Well,
it was massive. Apparently, it's like super hard. Like, he was washing his hands like 17,000 times a day.
I don't blame him. They seem like a gross place to be, just like kids in like weird viscous fluids everywhere.
But it wasn't Double Dare that made him OCD.
No. I think that was just like, hey, you already have OCD, but we need you to host this game show.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, that's why at the end of every episode, he made the kids go do that three times and then turn around three times and then go do the thing.
Oh, dear.
And OCD. Monk was based on him.
Yeah.
So, Zach, this is as we end the show here, this is where you have the opportunity to shill whatever you got. You know, you got your Twitters, you got your...
Where can people find you online?
What do you want to promote? Operation Smile, whatever, anything you want to promote. Anything.
All right. Well, it's been great, guys. See you.
I'm out.
So my Twitter, Instagram, both at Zachary Levi. My Facebook, Zachary Levi Facebook. I don't really know. I have it connected to my deal. I don't even know what the actual Facebook is. You'll find it. Mm-hmm. You'll like it or not. I don't really care. what else? Oh, Operation Smile, as we talked about before, I'm an ambassador for them. They're an incredible organization. They go around the developing world and bring top doctors, plastic surgeons, anesthesiologists, nurses, volunteers to go and essentially do operations on a lot of mostly children, but even some adults that are born with either cleft lips or cleft palates and other oral deformations as well. Just giving people new leases on life. It's really a tremendous organization. They do tremendous work. And also, you know, for all of you out there who are kind of leery about where a lot of money goes to with nonprofits, which, by the way, you should be. There's a lot of very interesting nonprofits out there. In the pie chart of giving and spending, like, they are very good about trying to put as much money as they can toward the operations themselves. People like myself who are ambassadors who go and, like, you know, do fundraisers or go and do missions trips with them, we pay for our own way. It's not even like they're saying, hey, celebrity, come and do this thing. Like, hey, if you want to come down, we'd love for there to be more exposure. It's going to cost you money to get down to Honduras. So, you know, and it, as it should be, I think. Yeah. I think they're very good about that kind of stuff. They try to keep their administration fees down really low. And again, put as much money as they can toward helping the world. So go check them out, operationsmile.org, or you can follow them on Twitter at Operation Smile. I have a company called The Nerd Machine, as you mentioned earlier. You can go to at The Nerd Machine, as well as the Facebook, Nerd Machine Facebook. I really don't know how Facebook tags work. I'm realizing right now.
It's just like usually at, then you start typing whatever name you're looking for. It'll find
even
it'll
on give you a list of, even on Facebook.
This it'll give you a list of pages, and usually I imagine that those pages, the official ones.
There's
verified.
So many doppelgangers, too, though. But anyway, well,
there's verified pages now on Facebook, too.
Oh, good.
So.
Oh, they finally did that.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. My page on Facebook that's verified is Zachary Levi.
Yeah. you can follow us at Facebook or on Twitter at The Nerd Machine. Or, you know, go to thenerdmachine.com. And we got a lot of fun, like, you know, merch and editorial stuff and more content that's coming soon. And then beyond that, like, I don't know. There's nothing like currently to promote other than listen to us on the Picking Favorites podcast because we've been doing that for fun. And whenever I get another job, I'll let everybody know.
Awesome.
Yeah. So that's that. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Thank you for coming. We really appreciate it.
Had a lot of fun.
And if you guys would like to find us online, well, guess what? You're in luck. You can find the podcast online at TWL Podcast. We're also on Facebook. Today We Learned with Razzle and Dan. If you want to email us, that's great. We want to hear from you. Send us an email, todaywelearnedpodcast@gmail.com. And if you want something slightly more personal, well, we have personal accounts. You can find me on Twitter at Osteoferocious.
You can find me at Twitter at My Name is Razzle 2.
And, guys, thank you so much for listening. We hope you have a very good holiday season as you're heading into that. Travel safe, all that fun stuff. Please continue to tell your friends, like it on iTunes, all that fun stuff. We really appreciate all the kind words and feedback you've left so far.
Yeah, we appreciate it all, you know, and as, you know, we're nearing up, you know, all of the holidays, be it Christmas, Hanukkah, New Year's, everything, and just everybody have a safe time and have fun with your friends or your family or, you know, whatever. However you celebrate the month of December and January, enjoy it. And, you know, it's kind of been a thing, you know, a lot we've touched on is just enjoy life and remember things and enjoy who you're with. So, do that. And as always,
I can't let you learn that, David.
Thank you.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.